Good evening, it's Dr. Dan Guerras, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today, of course, is the 15th of April, 2024. This is going to be lecture number 4 in our discussion of T lymphocyte membrane biochemistry. And this is going to be the first chapter in immune cell biochemistry, which I've decided we're going to spend some time on for the next, probably several weeks, at least a good section of springtime here in 2024, because there's a great deal we want to cover. So, proper function and locomotion of lymphocytes will require intact function of the actin cytoskeleton, like we have been saying. And it's well known that T cell activation induces an actin polymerization. And any kind of small molecule that can disrupt the actin cytoskeleton directly inhibits T cell activation. So what about the actin skeleton? Well, it regulates, as we've been saying, the shape as well as the movement of antigen-specific T cells. And it is essential for the formation of the T cell synapse through the utilization of the microvilli. Of course, microvilli are dependent on lipid rafts. So lipid rafts become necessary for cytoskeletal interactions with the intact plasma membrane of the T cell. So T cell membrane take-homes we can get to at this point are: there is a selective confinement of lipids and polypeptides to discrete sequences of the membrane. Those domains, which we're calling lipid rafts, are of course enriched in sphingolipids and cholesterol, and they are found in basically all eukaryotic cells, not just T cells. that is the rafts. And what do? Again, generically, they contribute to the structure and function of, for example, caveolae. Remember, those are plasma membrane invaginations that are, of course, implicated in signal transduction, endocytosis, transcytosis, and, of course, trafficking of lipids in general. That's where lipids can dock. For example, cholesterol coming off of lipoproteins. So, lipid rafts impose a short and long-range lateral organization onto the plasma membrane as a platform and activating molecular sequence. So increasing the efficiency and specificity of signal transduction is a key effect of lipid rafts. And they do so by facilitating interactions between the proteins that are embedded in the membrane. And they do so by preventing not only association of proteins so they can function as a coherent polyprotein complex, but also to prevent inappropriate crosstalk between different families of interacting lipids and proteins. Because lipid rafts give you a limit on a boundary layer, if you will, over specific subregions of the membrane, nevertheless comporting a sequenced membrane that is read by cell-cell contact and the entire repertoire of G-protein coupled receptors and voltage-gated channels regulating the movement of solutes into the cell and out of the cell. And in so doing, making a direct contact to the endomembranous system. So lipid rafts are involved in many cellular functions. In circumstances we're discussing here, major issue is pathogen recognition. And then secondarily, cell signaling. Now, you know, pathogen recognition and cell signaling can lead to pathogen ingress into the cell or pathogen egress after replication. So these lipid rafts help organize around the outcome of any potential pathogen host interaction, because they sense the structure and the event biochemistry of the pathogen. And in so sensing that potential pathogenic infection, lipid membrane rafts help control all the way back into the nucleus by signaling cytokine production and then secretion. But not only do they play a role in the expression of cytokines and, in fact, chemokines and growth factors and extracellular matrix proteases, but they also facilitate the transport of some of those proteins through the endomembranous and then the plasma membrane. By controlling the bulk movement of those proteins nascently synthesized because of the signaling that was afforded and then obtained by lipid raft biochemical pathways, all of which are organizing specific protein domains to deal with unique features of the environment, such as a pathogen invasion, or potentially the mediated control over autophagy or programmed cell death if that given cell is inappropriately expressing endogenous genes. And where do you find that often? Of course, in cancer cells. Right? So these lipid membrane rafts aren't just involved in pathogens, aren't just involved in stress responses, such as working with the PAMPs and the DAMPs, which of course they are involved in, but they also help regulate either the promotion, which is because of a disruption of the lipid membrane raft in association with the corruption of the transcriptome, the proteome, and the lipidome, or the lipid membrane rafts help defeat the cancerous growth, and if it's at the stage of development where this can occur, metastasis. Okay. Invasion and growth and metastasis, right? So these lipid membrane rafts are all involved in all of the crosstalk and normal communication that all cells possess, right? So they're not unusual phenomena by any means, right? In fact, lipid membrane rafts are as common as some of these other platforms we've been talking about, such as the inflammasome, which was the discussion of our last mosaic. So the lipid membrane rafts are also involved in recognizing virus of specific pathovar radiants and, of course, multiple bacterial cell wall components, such as lipopolysaccharide. The lipid membrane rafts also regulate C-type lectin receptors when they are stimulated by fungal cell wall components, such as the beta-glucans, which can also lead to nascent transcription, translation, glycosylation, and secretion of a nested set of cytokines from the T-cell. So, of course, one of the major events that has to occur extracellularly is trafficking of T cells to a site of potential infection or an oncogenic event. And we've been bringing these up several times. A unique form of cytokines known as chemokines play that role. Spend a little bit of time on chemokines. First of all, when you have a chemokine gradient, you're going to help traffic molecular or cellular events along that concentration gradient. Second thing to remember about chemokines, they're small proteins basically that are cytokine in nature in terms of structure, but The second thing to remember about them is that cytokines, just like chemokines, just like cytokines, chemokines being a subclass of cytokines, also require reception. So chemokine receptors are activated by a family of small molecular mass proteins, which of course are the chemokines. And chemokines are divided into four major structural subclasses. The CXCs, or alpha chemokines, CCs, or beta chemokines, excuse me, or simply the C type, which are actually the gamma chemokines, and finally the CX3C, and those are the delta chemokines. Okay. So you have alpha, beta, gamma, delta, and then they have these unique pseudonyms as well that I just gave you. And the four different types of chemokines are going to vary in the number and position of four invariant cysteine residues. So self-hydrochemistry is obviously going to be involved. So as of the 2020s, all the way up to about 2023, I think is the last time I checked, there are about 15 different CXCs, 20 CCs, but only one human-described type C chemokine. And it's known, it has a specific name, it's known as lymphotactin. There's also only one type CX3C, and that one's known as fractalkine. But there are other chemokines that are always being examined and reported, and they're being put into those four categories. You can be sure that there'll be more described as time goes on. So the chemokine receptors then are also grouped. You have CRs, CCR, that's my favorite because it's easy to remember. It's like Creedence Clearwater Revival, right? An excellent 60s band. Or the CX3 CRs. And they correspond to the chemokines they bind. So even though you have all the subdivision into specific subclasses, all the chemokine receptors have a very high degree of structural identity. And what they basically consist of is a single polypeptide chain of about 350 amino acid sequence. And they have seven transmembrane spanning domains, which are mostly alpha helical. Now, the N-terminal and three extracellular loops on these receptors cooperate and then bind the ligand. And the cooperative binding is necessary upon titration with ligand by concentration, and of course, chemical phenotype. Whereas the intracellular carboxy terminus of these chemokine receptors, that's involved in transducing, of course, the chemokine signal. And it's also necessary ultimately to turn over the receptor for internalization and proteolytic degradation or sequestration before degradation. Okay? Because these receptors turn over. So, yeah, this chemokine story I just gave you a brief introduction to. Let's go now and do the dielectrical interaction and go back to lipid rafts and show how lipid rafts and chemokines are interacting more specifically than you might guess just because of the generic makeup of the T cell responses specifically or any kind of immune response, synapse. So, lipid rafts, of course, are the key component of host pathogen interactions on cell surfaces. And we know that there are a lot of drugs and naturally occurring polyenoic compounds, such as the ones we were discussing from the different fungi, like the acetomycetes, psittacetomycetes, in fact, too. And these drugs or these naturally occurring organic compounds interrupt either lipid raft formation or upon maturing of the lipid raft, removal of specific molecular species of lipid. So that's deforming the lipid raft, altering its chemotaxis, and ultimately then its biological effect. And we know this because lipid rafts are very specific protein and lipid composition and sequence are absolutely necessary for the entry of viruses as pathogens and bacteria as pathogens. So some examples. This is coming from a paper published in 2022 in Frontiers in Immunology. It's a subsection of that journal in microbial immuno and immunogenetics and epigenetics as well. Vaccinia, mature virus clusters on lipid rafts. And when it does cluster on the lipid raft, it interacts with a type 2 glycoprotein on CD98 and the integrin beta 1. When it does that, by interacting via the membrane lipid raft, it triggers endocytosis and entry for vaccinia. Now, both depletion of lipid rafts and even a knockdown just of that polypeptide CD98 will reduce mature vaccinia virus endocytosis. So that suggests very strongly that lipid rafts are necessary for vaccinia virus entry into cells. Now, hemagglutinin glycoprotein of influenza virus, very common virus in humans, is also important for virus cell attachment and membrane fusion. And that occurs more efficiently when you have lipid rafts specifically of specific molecular species of sphingomyelin, ceramide, and cholesterol esters. So that's a very strong indication that the influenza virus hemagglutinin fraction glycoprotein interacts directly and employs lipid rafts for entry. Simian virus 40, SV40, upon infection in cells, has been well described to be translocated to caveolae, enriched membranes, and any kind of disruption of those caveolae with, for example, PMA, formal ester, or nystatin, remember that polyene, all will block SV40 entry. Human herpes virus, I'm just running through these examples here from this paper. That's HHV6, enters cells through binding to CD46, which of course is a plasma membrane receptor. But that plasma membrane receptor has to be associated with a specific molecular species of sphingolipid and cholesterol. And the cholesterol component of that interaction for herpes virus 6 in humans is any depletion of cholesterol in the membrane lipid raft will inhibit HHV6 entry. So cholesterol is necessary for the entry of the human herpes virus pathobar 6 into the cell, to the human cell. Another case, poliovirus and a type C foot and mouth disease virus, which is, of course, FMDV. They enter the cells apparently through lipid membrane rafts because the entry can be inhibited by using the M-beta cyclodextrins, which remember will remove cholesterol from the lipid membranes. In fact, you can get a reversal of entry of poliovirus and FMDV if cholesterol is depleted, okay, specifically in vitro in experiments done in the lab. So flavivirus members like Japanese encephalovirus, very, very dangerous one, that's JEV, Also, the dengue serotype 2 and the West Nile virus all will be inhibited by treatment with M-beta cyclodextrin and or using the cholesterol chelator Filippin 3. You'll remember that. I think I gave you Filippin 3, complete stereochemical IUPAC name. Pretty sure I did. It was either Filippin or it was the other fungal polyene. I'm not sure which one, but you'll go back and listen, I'm sure, and you'll know. And I can give you the complete stereochemistry of any of these if you want that. Of course, you can look them up. Now, African swine fever virus entry into pig macrophages is also dependent on lipid rafts. So it's not just with human studies, clinical studies. And a depletion of lipid rafts with, again, cyclodextrins or with nystatin will completely block that African swine fever virus into alternate host pig macrophages. Same happens with gram-negative bacteria like Shigella and Salmonella enterica. Okay, any corruption of the membrane lipid raft will prevent entry of those bacteria. So basically, depletion of lipid membrane rafts will impede, in general, bacteria binding to and entering host cells. So there's obviously a very, very tight correlation, almost a causation type of relationship. The only reason we don't say it causes it is because of the specificity of the lipid membrane rafts associated with all of those potential pathogens, suggesting that the specificity itself may have something to do with contact-contact chemistry. And that means that there could be variation sufficient enough to not have a direct generic association of lipid membrane rafts with all uptake of these potential pathogens, be they virus or bacteria. So let's go back to the chemokines. Remember, they're secreted proteins that govern the migration of leukocytes and lymphocytes to their specific niche. For example, within a lymphoid organ, and of course, to any site of potential inflammation, in fact, hyperinflammatory responses in particular, because of the increase in gradient density and steepness of that gradient. And of course, chemokines, as we've been saying, mediate through receptors. And you have this heptahelical G protein coupled receptor family linked to this entire reception process. The chemokine stromal cell derived factor 1, which is known as STF1 or CXCL12, is the only well characterized natural ligand for the broadly expressed G protein coupled receptor. CXCR4, which of course is one of the chemokine receptors, sensorstrictor. And it acts as a chemoattractant for hematopoietic progenitor cells. So you see, chemokines don't just work in the immune response, that is, in surveillance and in trafficking, and then in detection and activation of specific leukocytes and lymphocytes. Chemokine gradients are also involved in trafficking naive lymphoid cell lines directly to their target organ, okay, or tissue, such as stromal epithelial endothelial cells and indeed the lymphoid organs themselves. Now, in postnatal life, so these chemokine gradients are all being set up in utero during gestation. During gestation of human infants. But postnatally, the CXCL12 CXCR4 interaction regulates homing and retention of those hematopoietic progenitor cells. and the transendothelial migration of those leukocytes, as well as their lymphoid and peripheral trafficking into the thymus. So the early stages of programming and education of the nascent immune system in gestating fetus and babies in humans is all being regulated during gestation by chemokine gradients. Okay? So they're already playing a role there. Right? In fact, they play a role in the subsequent differentiation of the CXCR4 positive early T lymphoid progenitors. Okay? Now, in the periphery, the CXCL12, CXCR, remember the R is for the receptor 4 isoform axis, contributes to the homing positioning activation of T cells within secondary lymphoid tissues. And so, because of all of these potential interactions and alteration of CXCR4 expression has been shown, at least in cell culture, but then is, of course, implied in vivo, to greatly corrupt T cell differentiation and trafficking, if there's any corruption of CXCR4 expression. Now, you know, that's all going to be dependent on also the translocation of these receptors via membrane lipid rafts. So when we say expression, we don't just mean transcription, translation, post-translational modification, transport of the polypeptide to some subcellular region. No, we also mean membrane lipid rafts have to be involved in the entire process of recognizing polypeptides, incorporating them into the membrane lipid raft in very specific sequence order, and trafficking them to the locations in the membrane, particularly like in the surface plasma membrane. Okay, but that's not the only place, obviously. Okay, so what else we want to say here? Any kind of CXCR4 corruption of expression will give you a T cell lymphopenia, and this will be associated with impaired intrathymic maturation, obviously. And in transgenic mice overexpressing, now they're overexpressing the human CXCR4 in CD4 positive T lymphocytes, they harbor a severe CD4 positive T cell depletion in peripheral blood, with a concomitant increased homing of those cells directly to macrophages. And then that association with macrophages are these CD4 positive T cells can induce inappropriate inflammatory responses. Okay. They also, these CD4 cells, when they're inappropriately trafficked, can also start interacting with basement membrane. So there's a lot of interaction here. Cell-cell contact, membrane-membrane association. Okay. So trafficking effector and memory lymphocytes to the peripheral tissues is going to be regulated by changes in the repertoire of chemokine receptors. Those receptors that are expressed on the memory or effector cell surface. And of course, the abundance of the chemokines generated by innate immune cells and the site of infection. So the innate immune cells have to generate the chemokines so that the lymphocytes can traffic to where those innate immune cells are promoting their migration for controlling inflammation. Okay. And that helps select the effector subset of the T lymphocytes being trafficked, obviously. Okay, we've got to stop here. And we'll pick this up next time. This is a Monday evening. Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast, 15 April 2024. Wishing you a pleasant Monday evening, and bye for now.